Hey, I'm Sherry.
And I'm Marty.
Tired of hearing bad news everywhere you turn? Well, we are.
We're taking a little journey back to simpler times. Come along for the ride as we share some of our fun childhood memories. Might even jog some of your memories, too.
I don't know, Marty. My memory lane is like a cul-de-sac these days.
Hey, that is not going to stop us. Come join us for
Just Jiggle the Handle.
So I don't know if you had any special programs or special things that happened in any of your classes, but in fifth grade, Mrs. Harrison had what was known as the knighthood program. Mm. And each of us would make a shield with a helmet, you know, armor on it or something. We'd make our own shield. And
let's talk about the shield for a minute. What was it? Was it like cardboard covered in foil?
It was just important. A piece of paper we cut out. No, it wasn't.
Okay.
No, it was just to put on the wall.
Okay.
But we had, anytime we did something special, like if we made an A on a test or if we gave a book report, read a book and gave a book report, we would get a star, a gold star on our shield. And everybody tried to fill up their shield and sword, there was also a sword, with as many gold stars as possible, because at the end of the year, whoever had the most stars would be, I guess, King Arthur or Sir Galahad or somebody. It was, you know, somebody was big, and then it would go down from there. You know, Lady Guinevere, I think, was in there, and Lancelot, but she had this whole tier system. And then at the end of the year, just for our class, nobody else was crazy enough to do this, we would have a knighting ceremony, and it was a big thing, and I think parents were invited or something. I don't remember. So I had always scored at the top of my class all through elementary school, always got straight A's. I didn't know what a B was. And so I just assumed I was going to be Lady Arthur. And, you know, it was just no question. That's what I always outperformed. But I obviously was such a show off that I totally screwed myself, because one of the books I was going to read or was trying to read was Gulliver's Travels.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is not a fifth grade book. It is really dense and very long with tiny print. And every week I would try to read on it and read on. And meantime, I was taking months to read this book because it was so complicated and so dense. And once I started, I was just determined to finish. I just couldn't not finish something. So I kept reading books. And of course, everybody else in the class is reading a book a week, you know, the Nancy Drew book or the Hardy Boys, and they were getting a star and doing a book report. And I wasn't. I was still reading Gulliver's Travels. So by the end of the class, I think finally, after maybe 4 months, I put Gulliver's Travels aside and read something else so that I could start racking up points. But at the end of the year, I was number 3 in the class, which to me was absolutely devastating. That, you just shoot me now. That did not happen to Martha Elkin. So I think I got to be Lancelot, and it just irritated me that Mike Twerry and Sharon Whitmore got to be number 1 and number 2, and that just seemed so wrong and unjust. And I hated Gulliver from the bottom of my heart. So we had the knighting ceremony, and I was just mortified that I wasn't at the top of the sphere here. But it's weird, because that story, Gulliver's Travels, it kind of haunted me for the rest of my life. When I grew up and was trying to get into the film business, they were making the movie Gulliver's Travels, and I was trying to apply to work on it in some way. And I had made some connection, who was some connection, and was trying to get on part of the crew, probably as a production assistant or something. And I can't remember. I either didn't get the job or the movie fell through and never got made. And then I was taking acting and mime classes, and I took a mime class that was fantastic. It was just a spectacular mime class. And the teacher, Gary, was putting together Gulliver's Travels as part of our mime class. And we would, with our bodies, create these images for Gulliver's Travels. Like, we would all take certain positions and become the boat that sails on the sea, and other people would be the sea that we were sailing on, and somebody would be the sail that was waving. And It looked really amazing. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is going to be a spectacular play because everybody was into it. And he just had such great ideas about how to create these images. But we worked on it for months and it never happened. So that was three times in my life where I was avidly working toward Gulliver's Travels, you know, reading the book and trying to work on the movie that didn't happen, and then the play that didn't happen. And to this day, I have not read the damn book.
Gulliver let you down.
He totally screwed me. He and the Lilliputians or whatever they were.
Lilliputians.
Lilliputians. Is that right? See, that's where I probably went wrong in fifth grade, calling them Lilliputians southern accent.
Come on, you do it.
I can hear the book report now.
Then out came the Lilliputians.
The Lilliputians.
Well, that's a sad
thing.
Was there ever a movie in modern times made?
Seems to me I saw something not too long ago that was for Netflix or something like that. I didn't get to work on it, but you know.
No. Yeah. Well, that just whole thing sounds like a disappointment.
I should read the book. You know, before I die, I should read the book and just put it to rest for once and for all.
I ever attempted it.
Here's the cool thing. I can't die until I read that book. So this could, you know, speak to long life forever.
Yeah. It's your longevity plan. I like it. Well, speaking of fifth grade, I don't think I remembered reading anything that I didn't have to, you know, and we had, did you have SRA? I think that's what it was called. It was like a program, like where there were different colors and different skill levels and you'd have to, there may be enough of a grade difference between us that it was something newfangled that came along, but I don't know. Maybe that was younger years. But anyhow, in fifth grade, one of my very favorite teachers, Mrs. Duell, I thought she was really old, and I bet she wasn't. She had gray hair, but she had cool black kind of 50s glasses. You know, they kind of were the cat eye, but she was cool. Yeah, I bet she just went gray early. I bet she wasn't even that old. But I may have mentioned it before where I saw her once at the store at the market, and I couldn't believe she shopped like the rest of us. You know, it was like a movie star. And she was always very nice. And I think I missed a lot of school. I would get scared and I didn't like school very much. And I would want to stay home with my mom. But my mom would write these really funny notes, you know, please excuse my daughter, Sherry McCrone's absence from school on such and such a day, da 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 da. You know, and then my mom would write something funny, and my mom was very funny. My mom didn't know she was funny, but she was very funny. And so I always knew that I was kind of in with Mrs. Duell because she was probably concerned about me missing so much school. But my mom always had these – and I think my mom probably did it to just back me up a little bit. But I would watch Mrs. Duell read my absence letter, and she'd start laughing. And, of course, I'd tell my mom, which just made her want to do even better. It was like, yeah, why don't you miss another day of school so I can write another note for you. But I really liked her. But she talked to the students like we were adults. And I know we were talking off air about this, how you didn't like when you were little, when people talked down to you. But I had a connection with her. So anyhow, I asked her if I could ask her a question. And I think it was after school or maybe it was on the way to lunch, but it was only she and I in the classroom, which I think is really cool now because I could have done it in front of the whole class and tried to get a big laugh out of it. But, you know, I wanted it. This was something special for her. So I asked her to hold out. And I don't know where I heard. I must have heard it from somewhere. But I asked her to hold out her hands. And she did. And that was the other cool thing is she did what I asked her to do. Like, you would never ask an adult to do, like, in the 60s, you would never ask an adult to do something, right? But, you know, so I don't know. I'm just feeling very proud now that I was so brave to ask her this. So I said, can you put out your hands? Like, you know, palms up. And she did. And I took a black pen, and I don't even know if I asked her if it was okay, but in the center of her palm, I made a little circle, a black circle with the ink, and I colored it in. And then I did it on the other one. And then she just sat there, and she said, okay. And I said, okay. And she said, well, what am I supposed to do now? And I said, well, put your hands up to your ears. And so she put the dot side of the palm of her hand up to her ears. And she's holding it there and she's just waiting. And I said, what do you hear? She said, I don't hear anything. I said, oh. And then she takes her hands and I said, oh, that's too bad. And she goes, well, why? What am I supposed to hear? And I said, well, you're supposed to hear the ink spots.
Ah.
And she laughed and of course I could do no wrong after that, but it was right. So great because I told this, how would I know who the ink spots were, you know, but it was just so fun. And she just, I don't know, it was a very fond moment with her and also for my mom because she really liked my mom too. And so, and I didn't really know why it was funny, but I knew that it was going to get a big laugh, but she was so impressed that, you know, I knew. How old are we in fifth grade?
Like 10.
Yeah. So anyway.
You know, my fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Harrison, after that year, there was some, let's see, that would have been like 65, but I think there was a thing near, not too far from where we lived, that the Daughters of the American Revolution was an organization, and they would put on these functions and they would gather and have meetings. And you had to be related to somebody who was involved in the Revolutionary War, which I don't know how this got started, but they were doing some function at a place called Winton. And my dad had somebody in his family who was named Patrick Henry Elkin. And somehow he had traced back that he was related to somebody, you know, Patrick Henry or whomever, somebody who was around that was acceptable to the Daughters of the American Revolution. And they were putting on a play. And I can't remember what the play was about, but my dad was asked to play Patrick Henry in the play. And Ms. Harrison was asked to play his wife, which is mortifying enough. And then my sister and brother and I played the kids, their kids. And I can't remember if I had lines. I think maybe I had a line. And so they would put on this play. And it was just so weird to have my teacher play the part of my mother. It was just so odd. But even odder was my father was no actor at all. Was just, you could not have picked anybody who was less...
You're all trying to be diplomatic.
I am trying to be diplomatic. Less capable or less able to be a stage-worthy presence. Even in fifth grade, I had done more acting than my father and knew that he was horrible.
And what did your dad do for a living? What was his...
He was an editor for a historical magazine. And then he worked at a bank doing like publicity for the bank. And then he worked at General Electric doing the public relations for General Electric Company and put out the newsletter. So he was mostly sort of in journalistic type careers.
Yeah. Interesting. Those things that you mentioned, those jobs sound kind of creative. So he had that. He was no Barrymore, huh? Is that what you're trying to say?
No. Maybe if he had written the lines for someone else to say, we would have had something.
Yeah. And what did your mom think about all this?
I'm sure she thought it was amusing. She was probably amused at me being embarrassed to be Miss Harrison's daughter. And I was so blind back in my childhood. You know, I wore these horribly pointed glasses, you know, these pointy frame glasses. And because I couldn't see anything, they said, well, go ahead and wear them in the show. So here we are in these costumes from the 1700s. And I'm wearing my glasses on stage.
You've got your Julie Newmar glasses on. Oh, that's great. How old of a gal was Miss Harrison? It wouldn't have been Ms. back then.
And, you know, when I was 10 years old, I thought she was probably about 60, but I think she was probably 35 or 40. Maybe 35. Yeah.
And an attractive teacher?
Well, she was nice looking. Yeah, she was nice looking. Yeah.
Be a whole Love American style episode.
Nah. No.
Did you ever get sent to the principal's office? Of course you didn't.
No, of course not. unless he was going to congratulate me or something.
Yeah, I did actually. And I don't think, and I wasn't a bad kid, but I did something where I was on the periphery of some scandal, but I didn't, you know, it was one of those, I didn't do anything. I was just the wrong place at the wrong time, which is a tradition I've upheld over these years of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. But, and he called my mom, his name was Bernard Holding, H-O-L-D-I-N-G. And he was not a nice man. And he had a, did you watch the Beverly Hillbillies?
Yeah.
Ever? Mm-hmm. So Mr. Drysdale.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. He kind of looked like him, but a tall, hulking version of him. And, you know, and I was little. I was fourth grade or something. But I think there was some girl that was kissing boys at lunch or something.
That wasn't me, and was it?
No, it was not you. Okay. And Dickie Booker was nowhere to be found. But I sat on a boy's lap, I think. But it was a very innocent. It wasn't like I don't remember what the circumstance, but anyway, I ended up in the principal's office and he showed me the paddle. It had holes in it. It was a wooden paddle. Did you ever see the paddle? I think that's what it looked like. Somebody made that in wood shop or something. You know, he probably had his teenage kid make it in high school, but he showed it to me and what he would do, you know, what he was going to do with it. And I just thought, and my mom would never have gone for that, you know, and I
remember thinking, what was he going to do? Paddle you?
He was going to paddle. He was going to hit me. Yeah.
Boy, those were the days.
And I don't, and I, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I don't remember. I mean, I don't know if I told him to call my mom, but my mom came down and did the old, you're not touching my kid, you know?
Wow.
And so.
Wow.
My life of crime in elementary
school.
And
did it change how you looked at things after that? Did you?
It made me not trust adults. Mm. Like, you know, like I just, he's our principal, you know, it just felt like, even though I wasn't quite sure what was going on, I felt little, like I couldn't do any, like I couldn't do anything if he decided this is what he was going to do, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, you think about that as a kid, you know, idiot. Well, he's probably gone now. I don't have to worry about him.
That's right. Well, so when you weren't sitting in principal's offices, did you ever go, did y'all have field trips or anything?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think the one that comes to mind quickest is our trip to the La Brea Tar Pits.
Tell people about the La Brea Tar Pits.
The teacher spoke a bit about it, but you know, it was being there in person. That was the big thing, but it was a place, it's been around since prehistoric times and it's still there. There were woolly mammoths. I don't know what was in there, but it was like an archaeological find. They found all these animals and artifacts and things in the tar.
And can I just say that when I was in Virginia, we read about the La Brea Tar Pits.
In a book?
I guess it
was a big deal?
No, as part of our curriculum. Yeah.
Wow.
And I just thought, wow, that sounds great. And of course, I imagined it as this huge kind of vast wasteland of bubbling tar that just went for as far as the eye could see. And, you know, animals that were preserved inside of this. And I just thought that was fascinating as a kid. And then, of course, when I came out here, I went to see them and was quite surprised to find that there was this kind of this black tar, a pond, basically, in the middle of the city, not anywhere near as big as I thought it would be. There is a museum there where they've put the bones together that they've found of the animals that have been stuck in the tar. But I was quite surprised because I did not realize it was just kind of the size of a pond. And that's what people went to see.
That's funny. We didn't have any preconceived notion of what it was going to be. We'd never read it in a book. So I had no...
Oh,
I couldn't think of it as a vast wasteland. It was just, we're getting on the bus and we're going to bring a sack lunch and we're going to figure it out when we get there. So I'm
Wow. And I had a good 10 years of thinking about the La Brea Tar Pits before I actually saw them in person.
So the disappointment
was this what we used? Was this what we used? But I mean, it's still pretty cool. And I'm really glad that they preserved them. Not that they could have built many buildings on them, I suppose, because, well, look what happened to the animals.
Yeah. Well, there's still issues in the area with the tar, you know? I mean, I'm surprised they built anything around there. Well, that's fun. Well, two different perceptions of the La Brea Tar Pits. All right. Well, I will tell you one very important thing I learned at the tar pits, because you're looking into the tar pits and you know that there are prehistoric things in there and all kind of things from yesteryear. But then you see like the top of a rabbit's head, like a rabbit that was hopping around earlier in the day and stuck
you mean
in
like
the thing.
Real time that
right.
day.
Yes. And so that terrified me. And then I look at what's between me, my body, and the tar pits. Like, how am I different than that rabbit? And I suddenly was very like, I got to hang on to this rail, man, because what would happen if you got in there? Like, in my mind, it was like quicksand, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was, it was a little, I mean, I know it's supposed to be educational, but somehow I would always kind of see the worst case scenario of whatever it was. You know, is the bus going to crash? Oh, there's a rabbit. Oh, I could be the rabbit. Oh, this isn't good. Like, well, I just want to eat my cheese sandwich.
In your defense, can I just yes. say that a fifth grader going to the La Brea tar pits, I find falling in to be a very real and practical fear. I don't see anything wrong with that.
Well, thank you. I should try. Maybe I'll go back one of these days and see if I get that same.
Are you going to like take a little dip in and see if it really?
No.
No?
No. No. It's not a bad way to.
Don't you wonder how many teenage boys have actually tried to go into the La Brea tar pits? Just, you know, on a dare?
I'm just saying, the tar pits are not a joke. It's not to be messed with. You need to take it seriously.
Well, if you come back to LA and we mm-hmm. take a little trip over to the La Brea tar pits, we'll take a rope and we'll tie it on to a flagpole, and just in case, you know, because you just don't,
yeah,
it'll work.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a great idea.
Okay. Or we could invite the principal who had the paddle along with us one day, and
he might be already in there.
Oh.
Somebody may have
some other disgruntled students.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to laugh. That was rude of me, but maybe deserved. I do have another fifth grade memory that has stayed with me for many years, or better for worse. We used to walk home from school, mm-hmm. and it was a little over a mile to my house, and nobody thought anything about that back then. And I would walk by myself and sometimes with others. But there was one day where I was walking home. I was in fifth grade, and our school went up to sixth mm-hmm. grade, and there were two boys from sixth grade. I didn't really know them, but recognized them. And they were walking a little ways behind me. And as I'm walking, every once in a while, I would feel something kind of hit me, like a little pebble or something. And it freaked me out. I didn't know what to do. I just kept walking. And every once in a while, I'd feel a little tap from a pebble that they had tossed my way. And I was just beside myself and got all the way home, told my mom about it, and what she said has stuck with me all these years. Well, they probably just liked you. That's their way of showing it.
Wow.
And I didn't buy that for a second. I still don't, by the way. I thought that was just the dumbest excuse I had ever. Mom, go beat them up, darn it, you know?
Yeah.
What do you mean they liked me? And that kind of stuck with me. And from then on, I went, did they like me? Is that what
I
that
think
was
they
about?
Did. I think boys didn't know how to show that. That was their.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'd like to talk to all sixth grade boys right here, right now, and say, not a good idea. Do something
yeah.
else.
And sixth grade yeah. boys are probably a huge part of our demographic. So,
yes.
Got a real.
Well, they were at one point.
Real chance to do some educating. Yeah.
Some of our listeners were sixth grade boys at one point.
True.
So, hey, guys, you know, spread the word. Don't hit girls with pebbles if you like them. And that is my lesson for today. Was fifth grade a special year for you?
Then tell us your story on our Just Jiggle the Handle Facebook page.
Ooh, and like us.
Oh, yes. And while you're at it, subscribe to our podcast for more explorations into the inner workings of Sherry and Marty's minds.
Or what's left of them at
Just Jiggle the Handle.